Welcome to episode 21 of the Sunday Robcast. Today I'm up in Huntly to record a podcast with Alan Hale at Christie Park. Firstly, thanks to our sponsors, Battler Apparel, Twice Buried Rum, and the Feed Baron Burger Van out in West Hill. How are you doing, Alan?
All good, mate, yourself?
Yeah, I'm all good. How are you doing? Good. You all right? Everything's all
good? Yeah, perfect. Second kid on the way in a couple of weeks, so...
Nervy times.
I tell you, nervous but excited, but I people's not filling with confidence saying how easy it is or how difficult it is, should I say, to go from 1 to 2. So, I feel for the wife at the moment. She's obviously struggling a wee bit. Me constantly being away football's not really helping, but exciting times ahead and not long now, a couple of weeks, I think. So,
brilliant.
See what happens.
Normally on the podcast, we kind of go right back to the start. I said to you before we came on air, I kind of want to not brush over it, but we'll condense it slightly because I want to go in a bit more detail in the actual management side. But football growing up, was it quite young you started playing?
Probably just primary school stuff, just probably how everyone starts off in the game, to be honest. Earliest memory, I would think, was obviously stayed in Bucksburn when I was younger. Yeah. So Cloverfield School, it's not a school anymore, obviously it got demolished for flats, but that's where I started off.
Yeah.
Derek Robertson was my manager.
Okay.
He was assistant under Graham McBeath at Rothes for
right,
a
okay.
So earliest memory was probably the 4v4 festivals.
There was Champion Street?
Did Champion Street.
Did you?
Champion Street was class, to be fair. obviously done the 4v4 festivals, got down to Hampden with that, with Cloverfield. Really? Like, it was a little like tournament in around Aberdeen where the schools had to qualify. And I think it was the top four went to Hampden, and that was Hampden before it got done up to what it is now.
Right, okay.
It was the old Hampden. So like, we got to take a bit of the grass and that away with us when we were finished.
Brilliant.
So at least I could say I played in Hampden because I was never going to make it as a player, for sure. Then I went to Champion Street, the Champion Street thing with Bucksburn United. That was class. I mean, first memory of that, it was got thrown in goals by Derek because I was absolutely papoot field. So he put me in goals, saved a penalty that game.
I've seen you in goals at training, by the way. You're a cat.
Horrific, am I? I like to tell Wayne I'm amazing because it winds up at goalies, that's for sure. I got man of the match that day, got a bag of penny sweeties, Ken, which was always Ken when you're 5, 6 years old or whatever I was at that time. Ken, penny sweeties was a still is a be all there. Yeah. To be fair, that's when my fat bugger knew. That was probably the earliest memories. And then I didn't really play, to be honest.
No.
Didn't play juveniles at all, just played schools, football. Went to Bankhead Academy for the first few months, the first year, and I didn't play.
Okay.
Then moved up to the Brough, didn't play until I was 15. Didn't start playing again until I was 15, which was amateurs.
Okay, so, yeah. Just in the Brough, amateurs in the Brough?
Aye, Invercairn United.
Okay,
so
yeah.
My brother played for them at the time, and they were obviously looking for players. So, I always played football with my mates and stuff like that, but nae for any team or anything. So went to them, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was... it was obviously about the piss up at the end of the day, on a Saturday, which was always good. It was a good grounding, get you introduced to adult football at 15 when I went there, and it was physical, but we won a lot of trophies, and it kind of spurred that bug, if you like, for winning. And worked under a really good manager, Walter.
Old school.
Old school, just a typical amateur manager, but his man management skills were brilliant.
Yeah.
He was always brilliant to me. He gave me a lot of confidence. He always kind of trusted me that I was one of his key players. And any player will tell you that that's what they want for a manager. And then I obviously was there for 3 years, I think, 2-3 years. And then we played a Brough 18s in a pre-season friendly, and all that kind of kicked off there. Right after that game, it got obviously invited to the Brough. So
did you know you were decent? Like, I know it probably sounds like a daft question because some people. Confident in themselves, some people aren't, but did you realise that, like, obviously you hadn't really played until 15, did you realise quite sharp that I'm alright at this?
You know what I was good at? I knew I was very limited in terms of my ability and, my brain and my thinking and link up play and all of that sort of stuff, but what I knew I had that went in my favour was I had abundance of pace. You wouldn't think it now when you look at me in training, obviously. kind of run 10 yards without pulling a calf or something, but you obviously I had pace back then, and the one thing I always wanted to do was get a fullback and attack the fullback, even if I wasn't, you know, getting any joy out of him. You know, I would always try and take it.
Keep him busy.
Yeah, just keep trying to do the right things. And I think when I went to the Brough, that's what Charlie liked about me, I think, because there were players that were far better than me at that time. I mean, like, when I came into the Brough team, the quality that was there was just frightening. You know, James Geddes, Derek Milne, Russell McBride, Ryan Christie, Trevor Fleming, Mikey Stephen, who easily top three players that's ever played a high league, in my opinion. Yeah. He was unbelievable. Graham Johnston, Scott Barber then came into it at that point. He's still terrorising defenders yet. So
frightening.
A frightening team, with abundance of experience. But to learn off of them, can players of that experience, because the game's changed now.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. It's moved on. But being in that environment where it was ultra competitive, I mean, like, training was played probably with a higher tempo than you would play some Saturdays. It was people kicking lumps at you, you know, and you just had to get up. You know, people didn't feel sorry for you like what they do now. You got kicked lumps at you, you got a really heavy challenge, and you were told, get up, Ken, in no uncertain terms. And you just had to do it, but it primed you for what was to come on a Saturday, which was obviously really good. And then, you know, with that, you then start to win trophies, which obviously came with that. And it's no surprise, really, to see, if you look at teams that have been successful, you see that they tend to be successful again in the future. And I think the reason for that, or the prime reason for that, is because once you get the bug for winning, the desire to get more, to experience the feeling that you feel and the experience when you win a trophy, just gets greater.
Yeah.
And I don't think you'll ever lose that feeling of hay and that burning desire to go and get more. And I think if you look at, like, Fraserburgh now, with how successful they've been with the league and the cups, and you look at all the other teams in the league that have done the same, Cove, Brora, for example, they do that because they've got that burning desire and they've got that arrogance about them where, you know, they believe that they're better than every other team in the league. And we were never renowned as being a team that was up there really competing for a league when I was with the Brough under Charlie. I think we'd always finish between 6th and 8th, I would think.
Okay.
I don't think we ever finished any lower than that. There was one year where we were quite close to winning a league. I think we were 3rd up until the end of March. And then I think we went up to Strathspey and we struggled. It was 1-1. So the week before, we went up at Fort William, won the game 3-2. Neil Main scored like a 96th minute winner or something like that. Scenes were like, Bus Journey Home was unreal that night. It really was. And then the week after, or 2 weeks after, we went up to Strathspey and I came with chance after chance, but couldn't score.
Yeah.
Brother missed a 1-on-1 to go and win the game for us. We drew 1-1, and then I think we won a game, or if we won a game, it was 1-2. Maximum the rest of the season, I think we ended up finishing 5th or 6th or something.
Okay.
But we won our fair share of trophies and kind of cup competitions, Aberdeen Shire competitions, we won a fair share of them. And as I said, that alone is a great experience for anyone. And as I said, once you get a taste of it, you want it even more, you know.
See, when you came into the Brough, I've put this down in my notes and I've been intrigued to ask this to somebody. Is being left-footed a pain in the arse?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Because there's not a lot of left-footed players.
Yeah.
So, for average players like me, or when I first went into the team, I was probably what I would say an average player. You know, I was very limited in what I could do, but what I could do, I felt I was good at it, which was taking on a fullback and my pace going in behind and all of that sort of stuff. So I knew I could set up goals and score goals as a result of that, which I did, which was fine. But no, like, there wasn't a lot of left-footed players. So, you know, I think Stephen Main, James Geddes, who was kind of close to retiring, there was Neil Main, and then there was Mikey Stephen, I think. So there was only 3 or 4 of us. And Ken, obviously, Neil Main and Stephen Main were the first choice when I first came in. But I didn't think being left-footed or right-footed really makes a difference. I think it's really down to yourself, really, as an individual, and what your attitude is and how you apply yourself, you know what I mean?
Because a few of the boys I know that play or left-footed, they've started as a striker, they've started as attacking, but as they've got into mainstays of teams, they find themselves at a left-back.
Aye.
Like, that's more where I was going with that question,
because
you know how to play football, you're left-footed, get it back.
Aye, well, once I obviously got married and had a kid and I piled on a weight, then, you know, there was no way I was going to be a winger anymore. You know what I mean? I couldn't get up to their 18-yard box, let alone get back to my own one. So no, obviously, naturally, as I went to Belsley Bar and Brough United, I played the kind of latter stages of my career at left back, and yeah. I loved it, to be honest, because yeah. you know, you can recognise opportunities where you can venture forward, and you actually get a bit more time in the ball, which is good. So, look at Brock for me was unbelievable. You know, that last two three seasons, especially under Charlie Duncan, was brilliant. The team spirit was unbelievable. Togetherness within the group, but desire to work for each other. And be together off the pitch. It helped, I think, that at that time it was a Brock boys mainly, Brock and Peter Heed at the time, which was good. So mainly local players, so they fight for each other. But bus runs were unreal. I mean, like, they're brilliant. I mean, we had a WWE night one night, and I can't remember if it was like Wick or Brora or something like that. So I'll obviously, like, I think we put our names in a hat and like got ourselves a costume and stuff. So kind of, there's a Royal Rumble in the bus, and kind of, there's people doing WWE moves in the bus, and snapping the seats in half. And then we got to the Brock, and it's like literally we just took over the Brock that night. And it's we're doing choke slams and pool tables, and the Royal Rumbles in pubs, and then going pub to pub, we were out the street, and I was like cars stopping cars and like falling on people's bonnets. And I remember waking up in the morning at night, and I had like a massive like lump in the side of my head. But like, as I said, we're like throwing each other against like shutters of shops and stuff like that. I mean, when you were bleeding, it was that night especially was brilliant. But then like we had a rave night in the bus as well. So Russell McBride worked at Glen Adams at the time, so he got the paper mesh kind of boiler suits, came in a bus with a heap of glow sticks. Kind of, it was like 80s, 90s rave music, and the bus was just absolutely jumping. Like, even Charlie Duncan and Brucey Buchan, they're putting the suits on, and they're getting involved in it. Kind of, what are they, like late 60s or something like that at the time? And it was brilliant. And there's one story that I kind of need to mention, like Fair Bus Journey Home. So you can yourself, right, when you're up at Wick or Broer or somewhere like that, can you know that you're minimum four-hour bus journey home.
Yeah.
Toilet absolutely swimming with pish and all sorts. Toilet paper and either sort of stuff. Okay? So Brucey Buchan, obviously toilet's flowing, and Brucey Buchan, being Brucey, kind of goes and he's like, oh, I'll just like pull a lever and obviously like empty the toilet at the time. So I can't remember who it was. I'm not going to throw anyone under a bus, but Brucey's obviously bent down, as you can imagine, trying to get his hand out of Labby. Toilet door's open. One of the players just comes swinging with his feet. Bang! Brucey's head goes into the toilet bowl. He comes up the little three stairs of the toilet, and Brucey fucking never got angry, right? But he was absolutely fuming. But you can imagine, right, there's toilet paper in his head, obviously piss dripping off his forehead and stuff like that. And it was, the bus was in absolute hysterics. But Brucey was fuming. We got absolutely reamed for it on the Monday. We got reamed for it on the Monday, but it was absolutely class at the time. Like, but I'm sure Brucey would laugh about it now. But that was just, and for me, like, I think that can make a team spirit, to be honest. I think those bus journeys, like, you hear of clubs now that kind of frown upon boys having a drink and stuff like that. And I look, the league is a lot more professional in that respect now, but like that fosters your team spirit, in my opinion. When you can yourself, like, when you're at training on a Monday and a Wednesday, or you're just at a home game or something on a Saturday, you didn't really have that time to spend to each other.
Yeah.
Where you actually get to know someone that you probably didn't speak to that often. But when you've got those bus journeys and when you've got that night suit, that's when you foster people together. And that's what happened to me to Brock. I was a young boy, but then it was those bus journeys at home that you start to ken Russell McBride and Gavin Williams, and you start kind of getting into that group and gaining the respect of them, which I thought was really important. And for any young player, those nights are really important. So they were class. Like, they were class, to be fair.
Do you think it's changed in terms of that? Because I've been in the Highland League with you now, 18 months, and I think there's only maybe been two or three journeys where most of the buses on the drink or pished. From what I've heard from, like, back in the day, it used to be every away game. Aye. So do you think it has changed in terms of, like, not as in, I know you said about clubs frowning upon it, I agree, but I also think players don't really do it as much either.
No, I agree. I think the league's far more professional. I mean, how many people, you know, look at their physique now in the league.
Yeah.
Kind of hitting the gym all the time. You know, they're looking after themselves. Their diet's really good. When I played for the Broch, we would turn up in a bus and we'd have like 3 pies each for the baker.
Yeah.
Like bacon rolls and coffees and drinking Coca-Cola the way up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't important back then. And even with pre-season, you know, you would stop the season and you would take your 4 weeks or your 5 weeks off and you wouldn't do anything because you knew when you went back to pre-season you got beasted.
Yeah.
But now we are giving out programmes, for example. The players are doing programmes of sell through the season. And yeah, I think you've got to now because I think the league is, as I say, it's a lot more professional. And if you look at the teams that are at the top of the league, you know, the profile of their players, that they're all super fit and they've got that desire to be the best that they can be. And kind of teams at the stage that we're at, if we didn't do the same, we'd get left behind. So you've always got to find opportunities to try and kind of stay on par or stay ahead of what the other teams are doing. And that's just the nature of how football's changed. You know, I think okay, people are obviously in long-term relationships a lot younger these days as well, which I think you know, changes the dynamic as well. You know, people that've got kids, they're not going to get blazing and stuff like that all the time. But I still think you've got to find the time to have these nights out. You know, I always stress to the players that you've got, hey, one every 6 weeks or so, and try and get that spirit together, because it does make a difference, you know, regardless of what people say. In my opinion, that does go a long way.
Yeah. Before we kind of move on to sort of more like the management side of it, your Broch debut, was it quite quick after joining, the first team debut?
It was actually, it was 3 or 4 months, I think it was.
Okay.
I was out on loan to Broch United at the time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Under Donnindale Allen. It was brilliant. You know, I was getting a game every week. It was a really competitive league at the time. And I was doing quite well there. I was obviously getting game time, which was 17-year-old. That's what you needed, which was good. But then the Broch got a lot of injuries. And I think it was a few of us that were called back for a Scottish Cup game. Now, I can't remember who it was, but I was on the bench. I got called back. I was on the bench. I didn't expect that I was going to play. But I think we were winning 5-2, 6-2, something like that. I think it was a team for West of Scotland. And with 15 minutes to go, Charlie gave him a shout. He's like, oh, go get warmed up. And I was like, he's just telling me to get warmed up. Can you shout him over?
You still didn't expect it?
Nah, my arse collapsed. I'm not going to lie to you. It was like crowd of 300, you know what I mean, or whatever, which to me at the time was a big number. And I just remember standing on the sideline and I was like shaking like a leaf, but I was like, I really want to make a good impression.
Yeah.
And the only memory, Robbie, that I've got of that game was being so enthusiastic. Like a long diagonal came over the top and it was going out of play, right? And I was never, ever getting there. And I was just like, I've got to win this ball. And I just ran full speed. And you know where the pie hut is at Abellslea?
Yeah,
you've got the metal railings that the supporters stand behind. Well, I just ran full pelt. The boy gave me a little shoulder challenge. Bang! Just went straight into the bollards. The whole crowd was like, "Woo!" Got up and I'm like, oh, what a tit I am. And then that's a memory. That's a memory of my debut, like. So it was brilliant. I wish I could say I had a good debut where I beat a boy and scored a debut goal in the top bin, but no, I was I ran into the railings instead. So
did you start starting not long after that, or did you have to wait again?
No, I had to wait a wee while, as you would expect for a young player, but I kept getting like 15-20 minutes here and there. And the reason why I think Charlie kept me on was just because that enthusiasm. You know, I was young, and if we were chasing a goal, I think he probably saw this boy's got an abundance of pace, so
pace.
Play balls in behind, and obviously he can hopefully do something, getting behind a fullback and put a ball in the box or grab a goal for us. And step by step I then started to get starts under my belt, and I then got to a position where Charlie really trusted me. And he was really hard on me. I think he was hard on a lot of the boys, to be fair, but it was always with the right intentions with Charlie. And when he was hard on you, the good thing about him in terms of his man management was if you had a Nuco a game, he'd be the first one up to you with a pint in his hand, handing you the pint and saying, don't worry about it, forget this game, this game's over, we'll go on to the next one. On a Monday and a Wednesday, he would speak to you in training, he wouldn't ignore you, kind of like what other managers that came in would do, kind of wouldn't ignore you the Monday, Wednesday, and, you know, roast you on a Saturday before you went and played. He would try and give you the confidence, and that's what he always done for me. He gave me the confidence, and I knew I wasn't the best player on the team or anything like that, but I knew he trusted me to perform, and for me, that always made me want to do well for him, and do well for the boys as well, because as I said, it was a good spirit. So it was good.
I'm intrigued to know, because I know what you're like now. I obviously didn't know you when you played. Were you quite harsh on yourself when you played?
Very.
Yeah.
Very harsh. And that's never left me. You know, how I am as a manager.
That's more where it came from. I wasn't sure if that's something you've grown into.
No, I think it's always been there. And I think the reason for that is because, like, I always feel that, you know, people have doubted me, whether it was a player when I first came into Brough, because, you know, I was young and I hadn't played the game when I was younger and I didn't get a lot of coaching. You know, I was kind of self-taught in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Just listen to what coaches are telling you and try and learn and adapt for there. And I thought that was what Charlie was really good at. You know, he would always pull you aside and give you pointers here and there. And I always listened to him. Maybe didn't always agree with him. You know what I mean? That made that known at times. I thought always if I had a bad game, you know, I would beat myself up for days, because obviously being a Brough loon, you know, and my mum stayed there for years before I moved up, but then obviously moved up in 1999, and you know, with my mates I would go and watch the Brough games all the time. So for me, like, to get the opportunity to play for the Brough is always a privilege, and I'll always look at it that way. You know, it was short-lived, but you know, that was for other reasons. And then well, I say short-lived, it was 7 years,
yeah,
but, you know,
still a long time.
Left at 24, so it could have been a lot longer than what it was. But no, hey, look, there's memories there that I'll always cherish. You know, we won trophies and great team spirit, and, you know, worked under a great manager and Charlie, and, you know, a really good club. So, always look back with fond memories, that's for sure.
The injury side of it, did you always struggle with injuries?
None at all.
Shake my head at there, straight away.
Yeah, no, none at all. You know, obviously it was a physical league.
Yeah.
You know, it was all, I think the league's quite young now.
Yeah.
In terms of the average age of many teams, it's young. But when I played, it was the average age, I would say it was late 20s.
It was a man's game.
It's the best way to describe it. And it was ultra physical, ultra aggressive. And you would just get kicked lumps at you the whole game, all the time. Especially when you play likes of Bucky and teams like that, men used to get some some amount of bruises. But, you know, you just learnt to deal with it. When you first join the league, you're like, "Ooh, yeah, fucker, this is really physical." But if you didn't adapt and you didn't go along with it, you wouldn't play. So, you know, you had to adapt. I was quite fortunate. Got a couple of concussions, probably with just being stupid. You know, I went to try and win a header up at Wick that I was never going to win, and the boy keyed in me inside the head, that knocked me out. Busting away back for Wick, and obviously I'm KO'd the hail bus home.
Fuck.
I remember a hospital saying, "I didn't let Alan sleep on the way home." Just everybody concentrated.
Just
to get
left you.
I just left me to sleep. Woke up groggy as anything. And then Rothes, I got concussed up at Rothes as well, taken up to hospital. That was end of season, just before our awards night. So I had a big massive kicker in my eye, stitches across my head. You can actually still see the scar yet, to be honest. It's underneath here. But then, I picked up a hamstring injury up at Nairn under Chris Hunter, and that was probably the biggest injury I got, because I kept trying to come back too soon. Pulled my hamstring, was out for about 6 weeks. There was a cup final, Aberdeen Share Shield. I rushed myself back, or tried to rush myself back for that, so I got on for 15 minutes that night, and I think a week after, done it again. So my season was quite stop-start for there under Chris, and then that was obviously the point that I left.
Yeah. So you went into management. What you mentioned earlier on in the podcast, you finished it 24, you went into management.
Yep.
Is it something you thought about for a while before you actually did it? Or was it quite, did it come quite quick?
No, to be honest, at 24, I don't think you're ever thinking about, "Oh, I'm going to leave to be a manager." It came about really, really quickly. I mean, I've been coaching since I was 15, right? So ever since I've been at college, I left school. I was coaching, so I was coaching at the time. I was coaching for Aberdeen, the community, and then the youth academy. I was coaching for Aberdeenshire Council. I was coaching locally in Fraserburgh for Keswick Park in there. So I was coaching all the time. You know, went through my badges quite young, up to C licence level, quite young. And through that, I got to know Gary Mann, and he was coaching with me on a Friday night at Aberdeenshire Council, so we covered like Fraserburgh and Banff area. And then he knew the boy Mike McCafferty at Maud, who was a sponsor at Maud at that time, great guy. And then Gary had obviously got an opportunity to go in at Maud, and he'd asked me, "Oh, do you want to come in with me as co-manager?" And at the time, I wasn't enjoying my football. Kind of my season had been stop start, probably due to form, but then that hamstring injury that I touched upon, and you know, I wasn't enjoying it in terms of the man management and stuff like that as well. You know, it was a big culture shock. But, you know, I'll always respect Chris Hunter in the sense that, you know, he's been really successful in his career. And it's a very difficult thing to do in this league to be successful. So he'll always gain my respect for that sense. But I just think for what I was used to what kind of came into, and, you know, I was very much a confidence player and I needed that man management. And so, you know, that didn't work for me. And as I said, the opportunity came up, and had I been a bit more mature at the time, you know, because obviously at 24, you're still quite immature, you're still growing up, and you're not really well-versed on, you know, various things that are going on in your life at that point. And probably had I thought about it, would have I done it? I probably wouldn't have. You know, had I been more mature than what I am now, I probably wouldn't have done it. But I don't regret doing it, because, you know, I think for me, I've got that grounding as a manager at a really young age.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot of mistakes over that period. But for me, Maud was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, me and Gary were co-managers probably for, 3 months? And then he obviously left because he had a kid at the time. And I just think the shock of management, you know, when you go from playing to management, to say it's an eye-opener.
It's a lot.
is an understatement. Regardless of what level it is, it's an eye-opener, you know. So, no, that came out the blue. Obviously agreed to that, and then I went away to... went away up to Maud. So it was a real baptism of fire. I went there, I think it was 2 games a season to go, and 12 players or something were leaving. They were 2 points away from being relegated, but the game before we took over, I think they beat Stonywood and they stayed up.
Okay.
At that point, but it was a rebuild that was needed, and it was a culture shock. It was like, you know, what contacts have you got?
Yeah,
was it all
pretty much contact related?
It was just players that I'd played with, players that I knew were out of favour at certain clubs. And I think the thing that was different about the High League back then, Robbie, was that you see players now that aren't getting a game at the, you know, mid to top High League teams, that they're going to other High League teams now. So players are dotting between the league now more than probably what they did when I first went into management. What kind of happened was that when there were younger players, they wouldn't go to another High League team, probably because the league was more experienced or whatever at that time. So we were able to get boys for Turriff, for Peterhead, for Mintlaw, the Brough. Obviously, with Maud being the catchment area, and we were able to attract really good players.
Yeah.
It took a while. I think we signed 14 players when we first came in. So we took over 2 points for being relegated. The first year we finished 8th. Second year we were 5th. Third year we finished runners up.
Yeah.
And we just obviously built the team as we went on. But, you know, that team that we had, to be honest with you, when we finished second, was an unbelievable team.
Yeah.
And it was a group that managed itself. It was just people that were so hungry to be successful. And, you know, what an unbelievable group of boys. You know, again, you're talking about team spirit. There was nights out at the time. You know, people were holding each other accountable. You know, they were demanding standards. Training tempo was frighteningly good. And, you know, we had a team on the pitch that played really good football, but we were really intense and aggressive with our work. There was a lot of mistakes made, I think, as well, because, you know, we obviously got to 4 cup finals in my time in that 3 seasons, numerous semi-finals, but we didn't win anything. And that's the biggest regret that I've got for that group, is not winning anything. And obviously when you reflect, and again, it goes back to that maturity thing, my philosophy at that time was, we're going to play a certain way, and I didn't care what the score is, that's the way we're going to play, and that's it. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I've still got those principles and those morals, they'll still stay with me. But I think as you move through the levels, you've got to be more adaptable, you've got to be a little bit more conservative. And probably looking back, you know, had we been a little bit more conservative in a couple of games, could have we won a league? Probably, because we're only 7 points behind it.
Yeah.
And there was probably 4 or 5 games that you can point to say we were in winning positions and we were still gung-ho. And if we shut up shop, we probably could have picked up 3 points as opposed to 1. So that's things that always niggle in the back of my mind, because, you know, for Graham and Alan Mathers to give a 24-year-old an opportunity to become a manager, and you know yourself, when I'm at any football club, I'm all in or I'm nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and I fully invest myself into it. And, you know, I was hooked in at Maud. Loved it, you know, as I said, great spirit. It was just that togetherness, which, you know, I always try and build whatever club I go into, and I think that's really important. So there are a lot of fond memories. As I said, good recruitment, but there was definitely mistakes, you know what I mean, that was made at that time, and just disappointed that for, you know, the relationship that I built with Graham Lawson and Alan Mathers, for example, that I wasn't able to deliver something for them.
Give them something back.
Yeah.
I've got a question, like, obviously you took over quite young, and you said you came in, well, obviously co-manager to start off with, and then after 3 months you were by yourself. At 24, like, you've obviously played, but you've never, like, did you base your management style on somebody, or was just a kind of do it as you go sort of thing, or did you have like ideas or things that you try to follow? Because I still to this day try and follow certain people. I base myself on people, you being one of them, and you know that. But it's like, did you have someone that you kind of looked at to do it, or was it just a I'm just going to fucking go and see what happens, sink or swim sort of thing?
Yeah, no, I think I had my vision in terms of how I wanted the team to play. You know yourself, I study the game religiously.
Yeah.
You know, and I analyse our team performance down at T every week, and think, how can I tease more out of the group that we've got? How can we be better as a coaching staff, which I think is really important. But, you know, I had a set way of playing, and as I said, those principles are still within this Huntley team now. Man management, I probably said, right, you know, how Charlie was with me, I'm always going to make sure that I'm that, but with my own kind of stamp on it, with my players. But I think you just adapt as you go, Robbie. It comes from experience. You know, when you first come in, you're really naive. You're wet behind the ears, as a cliche says. And I was very much that when I first went in. And as I said, it was nah, this is the way we're going to do it, and I don't care what the score is. But we were winning games like 7-5 and stuff like that. Crazy. You know, at the time, you're like, you're obviously buzzing because you're like, oh, you know, look, we're capable of scoring 7 goals in a game. And the attacking talent that we had on the pitch was frightening. And I didn't really ask the team to defend. I mean, like, we were fullbacks, were pushed right up. We left two at the back all the time. No, it was madness, really. When you think about it. And look, we've done really well, obviously. And the players... The players have got to believe in what you're trying to do, and that's half a battle with management, is if you get the players on side and they're buying into your vision, then it obviously makes your job a lot easier. And I was grateful for Maud at the time, because the players, as I said, were absolutely phenomenal. You know, unbelievable bunch. You know, Mikey Ray, in terms of a captain, is everything you want in a captain. Yeah. Like, what a guy, honestly, top guy. And, you know, if he was still younger, he would be a player. If I had to pick one player that I've worked with through my whole management career, he would be the one that would come with me everywhere I would go, if it were possible, you know, because I think he just typified everything I want out of a player. He's got aggression, he's got work rate, he's got intensity to go and hunt and win the ball back, but he's got just a desire to win, and he's a leader, and he cares. And then it was no surprise, he obviously went on to the Brock when I left, and you know, he ingrained himself as that person at the Brock as well, which just typifies everything that Mikey Ray's about. But not only that, we had Fraser Hall at left back, who just had an unbelievable left peg, and a top guy. You know, Craig Ritchie, you know, never seen anyone. Can he just would never panic, would never lose the ball, kept it simple, knew his job really well. You Luke Barber, Donny Fraser, my brother, myself, James Duquette, Paul Campbell, I'm missing players out here. I'm not naming players a justice by not naming them. Stevie White at right back, who very underrated.
Yeah.
Really, really top players, to be honest. Kevin Simpson was a great guy as well. I mean, I could go through that, speak about them all day, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was a really brilliant group. I'm thankful I got the chance to work with them, and you know, for everything they gave me, it was brilliant. And as I said, the only regret is we didn't get over the line. We had umpteen opportunities to do it, but we didn't quite get there. So that will always be a regret for sure.
You played quite a lot when you were at Managed Mod as well. You played quite a lot of the games. Do you find it easier to manage while you're on the pitch, or do you prefer it off, or is it one of those ones where you can do it either way?
The funny thing is, see, when I was a player, I wasn't a screamer or a shouter.
You said that to me before.
You know what I mean? I was really quiet. And it's funny because, like, when I left the Brock, I remember when I went to Maud, like, some of the senior players at the Brock at the time were like, oh, you'll be back in a year because, you know, you didn't speak on the pitch.
Yeah.
But I said to them, I said, you don't need to speak on the pitch to be a football manager. You know, it's different qualities. You know what I mean? It's because how I was on a pitch doesn't mean that's how you're going to be as a manager. that about myself, you know. And as I said, you know, when you're young and naive, you don't really care what people think. Yeah. And I think it's important that you've got a thick skin as a manager, because, you know, people always want to bring you down at any given opportunity. That's just the nature of the beast that we're in. And, you know, when you win games, you know, your team's really good. And when you lose games, you know, your team's really
you're really shit.
But then you're shit yourself, and you kind of got a clue what you're doing and all that sort of stuff. So you just learn over time that's just part of the nature of the game, and that's just what you've got to live with. I've loved it, to be fair. I absolutely love it.
Loved it. So after a few years, you've kind of mentioned that you went into the Highland League management with Keith. How, the biggest thing for me is, was there a major difference in managing at the Super League and the juniors to the Highland League? Was there a big difference, and was it very obvious quickly that there is a difference?
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
Just the quality, the tempo, the organisation of teams. And again, that's going back to the point that I'm saying to you, I was naive, just going, we're going to play my way and that's it. When you go to Keith, who can't remember where they were in the time, 14th or 15th, I think they'd finished, it was like, right, we're going to play out for the back and we're going to do this, that and the next thing. And, you know, the players took it on board and, you know, they were open to it. But see, when we came to play a Cove and stuff like that, like a Brora, you're playing out for the back, they just sat off you, waited for you to play the first pass. And they just swarmed in you.
And that was you gone.
And then that was you gone, you know, and you took a lot of heavy defeats. And I think that's the point where you probably start to realise that we maybe need to adapt the way that we play here and not be so open. So then we kind of adapted and became a bit more of a counter-attacking team.
Yeah.
And it really suited the players that we had, because we took Fraser Hall, we took Luke Barber, we took Donny Fraser with us.
Donny Fraser, man, was... unbelievable.
I tell you, he'd be in my dressing room now if he had done his injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a player that I trusted immensely. And again, another one with a top attitude. And, you know, you probably didn't see the best of him when you took over for me at Mod, because he had his injury problems at that time. But what a player.
Attitude-wise, was always there.
A winner.
You know, I loved having him.
A winner. He just demanded the standards. And that's what I said to you, you know, going back to that period, when you had, it's not only that though, I didn't even mention Weemsy and Baino yet. They obviously came in as my assistant and my coach, and they drove the standard as well. Like, didn't have any coaching backgrounds, but Weemsy had obviously been at Ibrox, right, and he'd played so many games, I can't remember how many games he played for Ibrox, hundreds and hundreds of games for Ibrox, won a league, won all the trophies, so he understood what it took to win and what attitude you needed and how to apply yourself. But what he was brilliant at, he was a brilliant man manager, right? When I was bad guy, he would be good guy. And we worked off each other and bounced off each other really, really well. And he was absolutely brilliant at what he'd done. You know, held the team together at times when we were going through a difficult run. And at the time, you know, you take it really personal, you know, and you're maybe not as focused as you should be. But he was always the one that would gee the boys up again. Would give boys a roasting, but goes back to that point that when he did, he then followed it up with being a top guy, and he's a great guy, and it's unfortunate for him that he's not involved in the game at the moment, because he's got a lot of excellent qualities that I thought, you know, what you need in a dressing room. So he was brilliant. And then Baino was a bit more quiet, not as confident, but knowledge of the game, outstanding knowledge of the game. Yeah. Again, won a league with Fraserburgh, then went to Rothes, so he's got that Highland League experience. He's then played for Maud, but he understands the game really, really well, and he's a bit more quiet in terms of his approach. As I said, he doesn't have the same confidence in delivering training sessions and that in the way that me and Weemsy did. But he would be good at taking boys aside and, you know, explaining, you know, the defensive aspects and all of that sort of stuff. So the three of us bounced off each other really well, and I think that's always important, you know, because I'll say one thing, but then they can come from a different angle. And the one thing I liked about them is that, you know, if they didn't agree with any decision they made, they let me know about it. And as a manager, you want that for your staff. You know what I mean? You didn't want yes men behind the scenes that are just going to agree with everything you do, because then it doesn't work.
With the Keith side of it, when you first went in, I'm intrigued to know, like, at Mod, you built that team up and it was pretty much your boys, because you rebuilt it from the start, and then you had the 3 years of just adding to it. So it was very much yours. Going into Keith, and obviously it was the Highland League, so boys, is the attitudes in the players, like, is it harder to manage Highland League players than juniors? Is there a difference? Like, is there any egos, or is there big time attitudes, or I'm not saying there is, but I'm just intrigued to know if it is you find the difficulty from going from junior to high league, because it is a step. Like, I know a lot of people say it's quite close, but there is still a step. It's a step in money, a step in everything else.
Yeah, I know. No, people involved with, you know, who maybe hinna had the taste of Highland League will say that the gap's nae big or anything like that, but it is.
Yeah.
You know, one-off games in a pre-season game or a cup game, you know, anyone can win those, but over a 38-game season, it is a different ball game. And for me, yes, there is a difference, because at Maud, you're nae getting paid money, like, you know yourself, yeah. What was it, 150 quid to 200 quid a season the boys are getting. Yeah. It's boot money, you know what I mean, yeah. Token gesture. And, you know, when you come into Keith, you know, boys are getting, at the time they were getting wages, sign-on fee. The boy Robbie Mackay was obviously behind the scenes that was kind of supporting with that. And then it does become different, because, you know, when you're at Maud and you're working with a team that are just hungry and driven to want to win,
yeah.
And be successful and fully on board with that plan to do that, you know, you would put a contract in front of somebody and they wouldn't even ask a question. Yeah, they would just say, how long am I signing? And they would sign it. And very easy conversations, where it then gets to Keith, you know, and it's all about the money.
Yeah.
You know, and it was never all the players, but there are definitely some greedy people out there that were out to protect themselves in terms of financial gain, that really annoyed me, to be honest, because, yeah. Like, of course, like, when you're at that level, like, you've got to negotiate the best contract for yourself, and fair play to you if you're able to do it. But I think that's secondary to the football side of things.
And
I'm always a believer in that. And
yeah.
For me, that's a big part of, you know, how I recruit now as well, is that, you know, when I hear a financial conversation with anyone, until they turn around and tell me that they want to come.
Yeah.
And that's important, because then you know that you're taking in the right personality and they're joining your club for the right reasons. So I think that's one thing that I've learned. And I won't, you know, I think I made a lot of mistakes at Keith.
Yeah.
In the time that I didn't really understand the personality that was coming in the door. And it was people that were just coming in for financial gain, and yeah. They weren't actually coming in to be part of what I was looking to build. Whereas now, for example, I know the group that I've got, and I know that they're driven to keep trying to move us forward. You know what I mean?
You are really big on that, because in the time I've been with you, the amount of times that we've spoke about several different players over... maybe if they'll be available, or they maybe are available, one of the first questions you always ask me is them personally. Like, so it's just backing up what you just said there. I know that's true. It's how they are as a person, at times secondary to how good a player they are. Like, and you like, I love that, because that's something I've tried to take on as well, because it is, you can have a team full of good players, but if you've got a team full of average, not average, but slightly less than good, but they all want to be there, they all want to play for you, that team's going to win over the course of a season more than the other team, I think, personally.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think, you know, at Keith, I think that was a mistake I made. It was evident that the boys weren't in the door for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And you could see that in training. You could see it in games. You know, they weren't getting a bit. I mean, obviously, there was stuff behind the scenes that, you know, played an impact in, you know, how that was driven. But I think whenever you go from one job to the next, I think as a manager, it's always important that you dissect the things that went well and always dissect the things that didn't go well, and focus on the things that didn't go well and make sure that you learn those lessons for the next time. And there was a lot of things that I learned through that time, I can assure you, that I've taken with me from day one, and things that I look for. And the player recruitment was a big thing, that now it's personality first. And
yeah.
You know, there wouldn't be a financial conversation with me until someone turned around and says to me that they want to come, and if they didn't want to come and for that reason, then fine, I'll move on and go to the next one.
So after the Keith, you went back to Maud. How was it going back in? Had the team changed much from when you left to when you went back in?
Yeah, I say pretty much a whole new team, to be honest.
What was it?
I'm trying to think who was still there. Craig Ritchie, maybe.
Craig. I was going to say this earlier on when you mentioned Craig's name. Craiger is the best floater in training you'll ever see in your life.
He's just...
you give that man a spare bib and he is an unbelievable footballer.
But I tell you what, see, this is a good trait about Craiger, but also a bad trait about Craiger, right, is that his attitude is absolutely phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
Right? He is a epitome of what a team player is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, when he wasn't playing, he was so positive to the boys that were playing, you know, and he would go up to all the players and... you know, wish him best for the game, and when he's on the sitting on the bench, he's ultra positive.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't criticising players when they're making mistakes. He wasn't sulking that he wasn't playing. He was epitome of what a team player is, and the definition of what I think a team player is. And I think that went against him at times, because as a manager, I think he was easy to leave out, because you kind of knew, oh, he's not going to cause me problems. And that went against him at times, especially when the third season, when we had an ultra-competitive team. You know, when it came to difficult decisions, you were like, oh, I can leave Craig out because I know he's not going to cause my problem. And that's wrong, right?
It's wrong, but it happens.
It's wrong, but it does happen. Yeah. You know, it's...
It's in your head, because you can't be arsed by Barney before a big game.
Nah.
Like, it's the last thing anyone needs.
No, definitely. But I think the one thing for me that I think is really important is that when I'm leaving a player out of starting 11, so if they play the week before and, they're being dropped or they're being left out of the squad, for me, it's my duty, my responsibility to speak to that player and tell them why they're not. So I didn't allow the opportunity for them to... They might still go away after I've had the conversation and moan and disagree with the decision. That's fine. You know, players aren't going to agree with everything that you say and every decision that you make. It's part of the game. But for me, it's vitally important that I speak to players all the time. And I think the ones that aren't playing as often, that you've got to speak to them more. And I think that's a strength of mine, that, you know, I can speak to players and, you know... All I can do as a manager is I can only be honest with people and tell them why they're not playing and tell them what they need to do to get in the team. And then at that point, it's up to them. You know, we try and have an environment where people hold themselves accountable and there's no hiding places, you know, with all the data and everything that we've got now that's available to us. There's no hiding place. You know, we justify decisions based on, you know, that sort of criteria. And then it's up to the player for there. So I think that's something that will always kind of stay with me now as well, to be honest.
So when did you have Crispy the first time at Mod, and then he was still there as well?
No, he second time, because I think he went in with the managers before I took over. And to be honest, when I left Keith, I was ready to take a break, because as you know, I wasn't in the greatest places at the time. And do I regret going back? Yeah, I probably do, to be honest. I should have took a break, because it all happened so quick. You know, I got a phone call and, we're going to part with our managers. Are you keen? And because I love the club so much, I wanted to help them. And, you know, I went back. They gave me support. You know, we got, you know, built up a good team. I mean, you know yourself, the team that you
It was a very good team, eh?
Ah, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
But because of how I was at the time, I wasn't the person I wasn't the manager I know that I am.
Yeah.
And I let the players down, but more importantly, I let Graham and Alan down, and I let Maud down. And, you know, for me, I regret that, because, as I said, they're people that hold in high regard, you know, got good relationship with them, a lot of respect for them. And because I wasn't myself in terms of what I was able to deliver for the players and the work that I was able to give in, that ultimately suffered the team. And the team was an excellent team. But I wasn't managing the group the right way. You know, and every passing week is affecting me more. So I needed to take a break for the game, you know, for reasons that you know. So that's what I decided to do, take a break. And thankfully you came in and got them clear of the relegation. So kudos to you for that.
Thanks very much. So you did take that break for a while. You started playing in the Summer League, Bellesley Bar, and then you went to Fraserburgh Juniors playing. Did you enjoy that, just playing again?
You know what, you feel free, because you know when you turn up to games that you're not responsible for decision making, you're not responsible for the result.
Yeah.
You know, even at that level, you know, it was for me, the reason why I went amateurs was, can I find enjoyment for it again?
Yeah.
And that wasn't nothing against Maud why it wasn't enjoyable. It was other reasons. A lot went on, you know, when we left Keith and stuff like that, and, you know, it really did affect me. You know, stuff that was just, you know, unfounded and things like that it was unnecessary, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then, you know, obviously I took the break and, you know, obviously got a chance to go to Bellesley with a couple of my mates, and it was absolutely brilliant. The boy Kev Bruce, again, you know, go back to the Walter White discussion, right? People at that level deserve a lot of respect, because it's not easy at amateur level. You've got to sort the money out, you've got to put the nets up yourself, you've got to arrange a kit, you know what I mean? So it's a lot of work even at that level. But he was brilliant. He was a proper man manager. You know, he was all positive, positive, positive. You know, and I would come in as a player and try and G-boys up and stuff like that. And but you know, it was not about winning or anything like that, but we almost won a league. And it was, I think for me, it got that fire in my belly again.
Yeah.
To be honest, which I thought was really good, and then obviously I played that season, brilliant. Loved every minute of it, and then Matty West gave me the opportunity to go Brock United.
I'm going to call you out slightly, for that comment about it's not about winning and stuff, because when you start joining in training, for the first 10-15 minutes you're running about, you're playing, and then you get so competitive in training games. the manager comes out so quickly.
It's not the manager that comes out. It's not that at all. That's ingrained in me. I class myself as a winner.
Yeah.
You know, and doesn't matter if I'm playing a board game with Georgie, I want to beat her. Right. She's 4 years old, but it's like, no, you need to learn that it's not about winning. But obviously, a 4 year old had such a carry on. If you didn't win, you've then got to let her win. But no, like, I think, because I've won trophies, yeah. You know, I won trophies at amateur level, I then went to the Brock and I won trophies. Although we didn't win anything at Maud, we were constantly in cup finals, we were constantly up there competing.
Yeah.
That'll never leave me. You know, and can obviously I've taken over jobs where they're maybe mid to lower end table, and then you try to build a team up. So, you know, we're not at a team where you're instantly coming in and they're ready. You know,
yeah.
It's something you've got to build up over time. But, you know, for me, I don't mind that, to be fair, because, you know, I think you then go in and you're able to make an impact, and
yeah.
and hopefully, you know, I've improved every club I've been at, I would like to think, and, you know, had an impact. And, you know, for me, I think for me at this level, success isn't it just about the trophies you win.
Yeah.
I think it's about, can you develop a player, can you make them better, and can you give them opportunities that if they can't be successful here, can they go and do that somewhere else? And I think that's what we're doing at the moment, and, you know, it's something that I'm really enjoying.
You are very good at that, to be fair, because obviously me and you've got a massive relationship off the pitch, and, you know, I'm very competitive as well, and I take things to heart all the time. Like, it's something we've spoke about and I'm open to say it. But that's something that you've very much tried and succeeded to do, that you've got me to think about the bigger picture all the time. In life and in football. And that's something that you've kind of brought to me, because even with the 18s and 21s, that first game of the 21s where we took an absolute shoo-in, you see me in the changing rooms afterwards, I was devastated because I thought I'd let you down. And the first thing you did was tap me in the back of the head and was just like, doesn't matter. Like, you actually smiled at me. You were like, forget it.
Yeah.
And that's something that you've brought into me a lot. So with the Fraserburgh, the assistant manager job, did you enjoy that? Because I know you're very hands-on. And I know that you're quite strong opinion and stuff. Were you all right being that second man?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for me, when I went to Brock United, I didn't want to coach or
anything. You just went to play.
Yeah,
you
just went to play. Yeah. And I loved it. You know, I really enjoyed playing under Matty. He was very enthusiastic. You know, he was organised. He was structured. He had a plan in terms of how he wanted his teams to play. He prepared well game to game in terms of what the opposition was going to do. And he was young, and, you know, full respect for young managers, to be honest. You know, I was a young manager myself, and I know how difficult it is. You know, you come in for a lot of eyes are on you, and a lot of people want you to fail because you're young.
I
experienced that when I was at Maud, for sure. Probably still do, to be fair, at times. And then he obviously asked me, you know yourself, when you're in managers, you take a lot of the burden on yourself, you know. And it's important to delegate, and Matty came to me and asked a question, and I wasn't sure at first, and Matty will tell you that, you know, I took a couple of weeks to think about it, and then I decided to do it because I wanted to help him. You know, for me, I was never going to go there and, you know, step on his toes or try and oust him for the job. That was never the plan. Never would do that. I didn't get involved in team talks or anything. You know, I left everything to Matty. If he asked my advice on the team, you know, I would give him my opinion. If he wanted me to help set up training, I would set up training, but Matty was very much the manager and I was just there to support him. So for me, whether I'm a coach, whether I'm assistant, whether I'm a manager, your role changes based on what that role is. And, you know, goes back to that point, you know, you've got to be adaptable, and I think in your career you've always got to be adaptable. So it wasn't an issue for me at all, and I thought Matty did a brilliant job at Brock United, and, you know, for me it's a shame that he left, because, you know, I think he had a future for himself, to be honest.
Brilliant. So, finally, we're into Huntley. You took the job on, but you were actually offered it 2 years before.
Yeah, I was. When I left Maud, probably about 3 months after that, I think it was. I think Charlie Charlesworth was a manager here, and he was someone that I got on
I've heard so much good things about
Charlie. Yeah, I mean, obviously when I was at Maud, he was at Devon Vale at the time, so me and him got to build up a relationship, and that's a relationship. We still speak to each other quite regularly now. Yeah. Obviously, he's first team coach at Elgin, but I still speak to him quite often. And for me, he was kind of like a mentor to me. You know, he was a sounding board that if I wasn't sure about someone, he was someone out with my management team that I could pick up the phone to, and he would give me something, advice for a different perspective. And for me, I'll always be grateful for that, because it's easy for people to look down on a younger manager and say, oh, you know, you've just got this big idea and, you know, you're this big wannabe and that sort of stuff. And people can frown their nose down at that. But he was never one of them. He offered great advice and still does to this day. And then obviously he left, and he obviously sent my text and said that he left, and he, you know, he'd recommended me to the board, and that the chairman, well, it wasn't even the chairman. Gordon wasn't the chairman at the time, but
it wasn't him.
But it was Gordon that gave me the call.
Okay. Was he just part of the board at that
time? He was part of the board, yeah. I think he was vice chairman or just part of the board at that time. So it was actually Gordon that gave me a call. Went to meet him at Inch, spoke to him for an hour and a half. And the key takeaway for that meeting, although I never took the job, and I never took the job because what I was going through at the time, like Emma just gave birth to Georgie.
Yeah.
I was really not in a good place, you know, mentally at the time. So, but the key takeaway for that was, I know from speaking to Gordon for that hour and a half that he is a man, a principle. He's a man of moral, and he's got the similar principles and morals to myself. You know, he was very genuine, very honest about the lay of the land in terms of the club, for all aspects of the football club. And for me, it was like he's someone that, you know, I can work for. It just wasn't at the time. And to be fair, over that period, every few months he would give me a text, you know, just follow up, oh, you know, how's your missus getting on? How are you? Blah, blah, blah. And he didn't need to do that because, you know, we only spoke for an hour and a half.
But
the fact that he did, you know, always kind of stood out to me as, you know, it's someone that's genuine in terms of how they are and how they deal with people. And that's very much what my morals are. It's, you know, it's you deal with the person first and you deal with the football player second. And Gordon's very much the same. It's all about making sure that the players are at the forefront of all the thinking. So then obviously during COVID, Martin had obviously resigned for his position. And then Gordon was on the phone again. It wasn't an easy decision because I was loving what I was doing at Brock United, and the fear of jumping back in, you know, when I wasn't sure if I was 100% was there. But I felt, from having spoken to Gordon 2 years before, you know, he would follow up me every few months. And then when I went and met him, I met him a few times before I made my decision. And I actually turned the job down. I actually said no to the job to stay at Brock United. But then he phoned again the day after. And we had a chat for about an hour or someone on the phone. And it was when he'd done that, I was like, nah, this guy's really genuine. So I'm going to... I took the risk and went for it, because I knew obviously Weemsy and Baino couldn't go at the time, because Weemsy had just taken over from his dad's painting and decorating business. And then Baino was busy with family commitments at the time. So I wasn't sure if I wanted to take that risk and go on without them, because, you know, they stuck by me through a lot of difficult moments, and, you know, I wanted to do right by them. But then both of them said that, you know, they might not be able to get back in, you know, anytime soon, so just go for it if you want to do that. They encouraged me to do it, and then I obviously ended up with Steph.
How did that come on? Did you meet him? Did you know him before you approached him? Or
I didn't know him personally in terms of, like, you know, having a conversation with him and being mates with him or anything like that. But when I was at Keith, he was manager of Aberdeen Ladies at the time, and they were training just before we would come on. So I think they were 6 to 7 or something like that, or whatever the time slot was. So they would be training, they would come off, and then we would go on. So I would always turn up early and watch part of his sessions, because I'd obviously, you know, he's quite, because of his accent, he's quite loud in terms of his delivery and stuff like that, and he's a very confident coach, but an excellent coach at that. And I knew his training sessions were good, and, you know, we would say hi to each other in passing and stuff like that. So obviously you then took him into Maud.
Yeah.
And obviously I was close to Maud. You know, Zach Conway is one of my closest mates, and, you know, he always spoke really highly of him. And even if Weemsy and Baino came in, I always wanted to take Stephen in anyway, because I knew we had Cameron Campbell. He's now head coach of Rangers 18s.
Yeah, yeah.
He was with me at Maud, And I always wanted that, like, you know, a coach, if you like, a proper football coach to come on board. And, you know, Cammy was that at Maud, and then, you know, Stefan was going to be that link here. And then when Weemsie and Beno turned around, you know, I phoned a couple of my ex-teammates, Fraser Brown, to see if they were interested in coming in as assistant with a plan, as Stefan, to always come in as a coach. Again, that didn't work out for whatever reason. So I had a call with Stefan, and it must have been an hour and a half, something like that. And, you know, we just spoke about FITBA. You know, this is my philosophy. He spoke, it completely matched. And I could tell from the conversation that he was obsessed about the game, is what I am.
Yeah.
So at that point, we'd agreed, you know, we'll go in together. And very quickly, we hit off. And, you know, the amount of work he does for me is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, he's a top, top guy. Got a great family as well, who've also been very supportive. You know, John especially.
His dad's unbelievable.
Nah, he is. He's a great guy. You know, very experienced as well.
Yeah,
you know,
very.
Been director at Morton, and, you know, a lot of experience, a lot of contacts, but gives a lot of sound advice as well.
Yeah.
Which has been really good. You know, Megan, girlfriend, you know, top person, and they're obviously waiting to have their first kid. But not only that, I think his knowledge, his experience, he's obviously been at Rangers, he's been at Blackpool, so he's been full time, so he knows, you know, what it takes to be at that level. He's then been at Montrose, but he's developed himself to be an outstanding coach.
Yeah.
And his game knowledge, for me, and I'm not just blowing smoke up his arse, but Stefan could easily go full time and not, you know, not be out of place. Not be out of place at all, you know.
I agree.
Tactical knowledge is outstanding. Delivery on the training pitch, outstanding. In terms of a support factor for me, I couldn't work with anyone better, if I'm being honest. I really couldn't.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that, you know, whatever happens in a career, he's a guy that I want to take with me. And, you know, as you know yourself, you know, there's been opportunities that, you know, have maybe been without him that, you know, I've not taken, because I trust the work that we do. I trust what we're delivering to the players is good, it's strong. I trust that the players are on board with that. You know, and I know how much hours we're putting in to try and make a success of it. And, you know, I'm very grateful, because he's running his own business. And I can pick up the phone to him at 1 a.m. and ask him to jump in the laptop and do something for me. And he goes and does it, you know, and that's, it's wrong of me to, I don't expect him to do that, but, you know, I think it's wrong for me to expect that of him, and I don't, you know, and he doesn't expect that from me either.
Yeah.
But as I said, you know, I'm glad, you know, things happen for a reason. I'm a massive believer in that. Not just in football, in life in general, things always happen for a reason. You know, the mental health thing happened for a reason, but it's grown me so much as a person. You know, I've learned so much with that, you know, I'm as driven and as ambitious as I've ever been now as a result of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, working with Stefan, you know, for me, kind of fuels that fire even more, to be honest. And
yeah.
You
push each other, like, in a good way. I see it from both of you.
Yeah.
Like, yous are always kind of just pushing each other that little bit yard further every time.
Yeah, but I think what's the good thing as well, and, you know, maybe people don't see it. People see it with me because I'm the manager, right? So when I feel that us as a coaching staff have made an error, whether it's a delivery or a training session, whether it's how we've dealt with a player, whether it's team selection, whether it's tactical adjustments we've made in a game, whatever it is, if I watch the game back and I feel that, you know, decisions that we've made on that pitch haven't had an impact, a positive impact on the team, I'll stand in front of the team and say that.
Yeah.
And the reason why I do is because I think it's really important that we're always asking the players to take accountability for the things that they can control. You know, that's a big thing that we say, is focus on the things that they can control. Then I focus on the external factors about what people are saying about you, or what people think about you, or what the other team's going to do. We can only focus on ourselves and try and deliver the best performance that we can get of ourselves. And I can't expect my players to hold themselves accountable if we're not willing to do it ourselves as coaching staff. And I think it's important for the players, in order for them to be able to do that, it's important for them to see that when we feel as a coaching staff we've made errors, that we're open enough to say that to the group and say, right, nah, we've looked back at this and we think that we got this wrong. Because I think it gains respect to the players, but I think it lets the players see, well, they're holding themselves accountable, so I've got to make sure that I do the same. And it kind of just be a case of, you know, every time we lose, they're not doing their jobs and deflect us at any blame, because that's not the case at all. But Stefan, you know, he takes it really personal when we don't get something, and you know, maybe a lot of players don't really see that because, as I said, I'm the voice. But he does, you know, and the first thing we look at on a poor result is ourselves, and you know that,
yeah,
with the coaching, with the conversations that we have. So, but no, hey, look, you know, I'm glad I found him. You know, it's been an honour to work with him, and you know, I'm very confident that there's many, many years left ahead of us in terms of working together. And as I said, I wouldn't work with anyone else in football.
Brilliant. When you came in, it was quite a rebuild. Did you know you had to rebuild before you came in, or was it something that, did you give it that time to come in first and then think I need to gradually rebuild?
Yeah, for me, I think it's important when, because obviously before you're coming into a job, you do all the preparation, so yeah, you know the team. Like, I watched all the Huntley games back, because obviously there was Heineken TV at the time.
Yeah.
So before I accepted the job, I had watched all the highlights back from every game they played that season numerous times, and I had notes to the chairman and things like that in terms of what I could improve. But for me, I think it was important not to judge too soon based on, yeah, 5-minute highlights, because I think that's unfair. I think you can you know, you can pick up a wrong impression on what you feel a player's personality is, you know, based on things that you see. I think it's important to see that for yourself on the training pitch. Obviously, when I took over, it was during COVID, so it was really difficult at that time. You know, you were getting Zoom calls, but I had a sense of who was on board versus who wasn't on board. I had a sense of that really early. And if I'm being honest, it was mainly the experienced players that had been here a few years. And if I'm being honest, I think they were too comfortable. They were too comfortable, and you know, for me, it didn't look like they were being challenged by not being fit enough. And we got back, I think it was 3 months, 4 months maybe, since we took over. You know, we're having Zoom meetings, and I was speaking to the players regularly. So I had a good idea, you know, having conversations with players, you know, you're writing notes down. So I had a feeling who was motivated, who wasn't motivated. And it's difficult, again, not to judge because it's COVID, you know, and that was affecting people differently.
Yeah.
In terms of their work situations and their personal lives and stuff like that. So for me, I had to make that decision once we got back into pre-season. And we got back into the mini pre-season, and it was shambolic, Robbie, to be honest with you. You know, the players came back, and, you know, we gave them plans, and they came back in terrible condition. Okay. It was embarrassing for a high league level where boys are getting paid. You know, some of them came back in just awful condition, you know, massively overweight, massively unfit, and quite frankly, nae interested. So we went through many pre-season games, and I can't remember who we played, but we got, I embarrassed in every single game. I mean, Brock United turned up here, and I knew, I'd obviously just left there, so I knew what that dressing room was like, and I knew...
Be a bit of fire there.
No, I did, because they were, you know, had that season they finished, Brock United would have won that league, and they would have got promoted, because it was a really good group for the level. It was a really good group, and you know, they're doing really well under McBride now, and they turned up here and they turned us over, but they turned us over really comfortably, and that was an eye opener, in the sense of just how easy it was for them. So after that day, you know, it was go to trenches discussion at that point on the pitch. After the game, obviously changing rooms weren't allowed, and I said to the boys there and then, I said, like, I'm ripping this up right now, starting again. And I think 5 players had left within a couple of days after that.
Jesus.
And I just took in young boys, and for me it was like, right, we'll just start with young boys, and we'll build it up from there. Had a really young team. I think we only managed to get 4 or 5 games out of it, but then we got the Dumbarton game, a really young group.
Yeah.
We managed to get through against Dumbarton, and you were down that day,
yeah,
you know, being a masseuse, and you know, a lot of preparation went into that game, but it was 4-0, but they gave a good account of ourselves.
Yeah,
but maybe not for an attacking threat, but for an organisation point of view, for an hour, we restricted Dumbarton to very few chances. So the players got a lot of them in respect that night, to be honest. And it's just been a case of building it up for there, Robbie, to be honest. And you know, for me now, when I look at the team from where it was when I took over and the changes that we had to make to where it is now, not only do we have, you know, I think we've got 22 signed players at the minute, you know, apart from the 4 or 5 young boys that are kind of in the youth development side of things that are out on loan. So 22 first team boys at the moment, and every one of them can play in the starting 11, so it's a really strong group. But not only that, the mentality of the group has changed a lot. Now, we've still got a long way to go with the mentality, and I'm confident we'll get there over time, because I'm in a position where I trust all the players that we've got in the door. I think we need to make wholesale changes to the group. I mean, it's tweaking one or two things here and there. We've got a settled team. You know, we've got players tied down on long-term contracts now. In our case, it's just about trying to keep improving the players, keep getting the best out of them, not get too high when we win and don't get too low when we lose, and just focus on the end goal for us, which I think is really important.
And I think that says a lot, because I was just thinking that there when you were talking about it. From that first Dumbarton game when I came down with Hughes, that was pretty much almost 2 years ago. Off the top of my head, there's four players there that are still here now. And now you're saying there that you're very happy with this group now, opposed to like little tweaks. So that says a lot that in 2 years you've effectively changed the whole squad whilst getting results. Last season we finished 10th, was it?
Yeah.
In the cup final.
Yeah.
Massive. This season we didn't start too great, but we're now in a position where we're looking to better 10th. And again, finishing higher than 10th is a success, really, if you build it down. No, so you've been able to do that, you and Stefan being able to do that whilst having a turnover of 18 players. Like we just said, you've got 22. That's impressive, eh? To keep going and keep getting results and keep changing the mentality of the club and the results while changing it. That's got to be satisfying, at least. I know you always want more, and that's why I like you so much. I manage you as a person. You're always, what you do is never, I wouldn't say it's not never good enough, but you always want to do better than you've done. Like, even if you get a, that was fucking excellent, you want a, that was really fucking excellent. If that makes sense. And that's you as a person.
And to be honest with you, Robbie, I'm conscious of that at times, because I don't want to come across over demanding on the players.
No.
But I am demanding on the players, you know that, right? And I agree, I'm you know, for me, if we finish 10th, we've got to finish 9th the next year.
Yeah.
If we get 34 points, we've got to get 35 the next year.
Yeah.
If we get the cup final, we've got to get to another one the next year. And, you know, that's just something that will always be ingrained with me. You know, whether I'm at a team that are losing every week or no, I'm still going to demand the highest of standards, and that's never going to leave me. And I think it's important that, you know, accountability is really important. Look, you'll get low moments. Like, football is, you know, it's a pendulum, isn't it? It's up and down. You know, you'll always experience good moments, you'll always experience low moments, especially, you know, when we're trying to build what we're trying to build here. But it's not only that, Robbie. I think for Huntley, when you look at when we took over, right, the first thing I done is I came up to Christie Park and I wanted to walk around the place, and I wanted to walk around it with the chairman. And I walked into the home changing room, and it was dull, it was dark, it was cold, it was depressing. And the first thing I said to the chairman was, this is a player space. And when I walk in here, I can't wait to get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it was really dark. There was no light coming in through the windows. You had, obviously had the partition wall that was up in the change room. And I was like, you know, what can we do? Is this possible that we can change this? Now, obviously, you know, there's grant money and stuff at the time, so thankfully we managed to do that. And, you know, to say, right, this is what I see a change room looking like, and this is how it is. And for the chairman to actually go and do that, you know, 2 weeks in the tenure, really was phenomenal. And you look at the change room now, like, there's no better change room.
Our change rooms are very good.
There's no many change rooms in the whole of Scotland that are, you know, is as attractive as that. It's big, it's a positive space, you know, it's got a lot of light in it now.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously modern, but it's a place where the players can feel comfortable. And you know yourself, I don't like being in and around the change room before games.
Yeah.
You know, I like the players to have their time together as a group before we come in and do the preparations for games. And then we change the dugout, you know, there's an investment being put in the pitch. You know, and a lot of people speak about, you know, the Christie Park pitch, and, you know, I've heard podcasts and comments on social media about, like, how poor the pitch is, but Dylan, the groundsman, you know...
I love that man.
The work that he puts in, you know, how old is he? 21, 22?
Yeah.
He's got a full-time job, and he finishes a job, and he's on that pitch every single day. Now, that pitch, he's going to turn that pitch into one of the best in the league.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. The work that he's putting onto that pitch is phenomenal, and look, it takes time to get right in terms of the amount of seed. I know absolutely jack shit about about groundkeeping, but he's phenomenal. And it's near that, right? I think, like, when you come into a club, as you know, I like to get everyone with one vision, right?
Yeah.
So there's no, can people didn't have any doubt in terms of, like, what we're doing, what we're trying to achieve. But it's important that you don't, you know, you didn't forget about the people that actually run this club on a day-to-day basis. And I'm taking the chairman out of it. You look at Dylan as a groundsman, a volunteer, who's putting a ridiculous amount of hours onto that football pitch on a daily basis. You've got Alex and Grant all the administrative work that goes through, not just for the first team, but the youth development, the women's team now that we've got, all the grants, player registrations, all that sort of stuff, you know, the payroll every month. You've got Alex Morrison, the club chaplain, who turns up to training every Wednesday.
Great guy.
He turns up with Lucozade, with water, with soup. And what a fantastic guy he is. You know, he's just, you know, a guy I just absolutely adore. I really do.
Yeah.
And then even down to George Mackey, you know, the photographer. He's just so passionate and so positive about the team. And then you've got the committee, you come in here, you have the conversations, you've got the Gold League, you've got supporters. And that's the one thing I'll always do as a manager. I'll always make myself available to supporters. And they tell you things that you don't want to hear at times, especially when you've lost. You know, they'll be highly critical. But I'll always make myself available, because when we don't win, it's my responsibility. And I'm happy to take accountability for that. And I'm happy to own that and take the pressure off the players and put that pressure on myself. But I'll always make myself open to supporters, and you know that I speak to speak to them all in the social club after the game. But when you come into a club where you've got people like that you develop relationships with, for me, when we win on a Saturday, it's for them.
Yeah.
It's for them first and foremost, because they're not taking a wage, they're not taking a salary, but they're giving up their time for this football club. And it's important for me to sit, that the players understand that is who you're playing for every week, because that's their satisfaction for all the work that they put in. Their reward comes from us winning on a Saturday, and I think it's important that, you know, they feel that they're rewarded when that happens. And it's not just the management and the players that are one group, it's the whole club that's one group. And I think we're there. I genuinely do. I think it's a really positive club. And to say that I'm loving my time here would be an understatement. I mean, this is a great club. The chairman, you know, I need to speak about him as well. What a fantastic guy. I mean, even when, you know, even if he was to sack me tomorrow, or I was to move on for here tomorrow, he's going to be a friend for me for the rest of my life. And Ingrid is partner as well. She's unbelievable as well. You know, a lot of patience. You know, I'm on the phone to the chairman. You know, yourself. It's a lot. And you know, we've both got two very supportive wives, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That I'm really grateful for, because it does take up a lot of time. But it's just the thing I love about Gordon is that he's just such a people person. And it is about the players first. And I think he makes the players feel appreciated. And he doesn't need to do that, but I think that goes a long way with the players, and he makes sure that the players are looked after. And everything I've asked for, and not just improving the playing squad, but trying to improve the overall environment of the club, he's gave me everything within the contents of the budget, you know what I mean? And he's just a fantastic guy. And, you know, I think he's underappreciated at times, if I'm being honest, you know, from supporters, because he's putting an unbelievable amount of work in on a daily basis to this football club. And the passion that he has for the club, and, you know, the way that he believes in my plan and what we're trying to do, and allowing me to put a plan in place in the first place and try and have the club move forward with that. And not only that, it's to have a plan that for when we do move on, that is how Huntley's going to be moving forward. Yeah. And I think that's important for continuity. I can't ask for any more for Gordon, to be honest. And he's such an honest guy. And for me, the most important relationship in any football club is the relationship between manager and chairman, because I think that sets the tone for how the rest of the club acts and behaves. And our relationship is really strong.
Yeah.
You know, it's ultra strong, and he's stuck by us through, you know, start of season, for example, was really difficult. We had a really good pre-season, and then, you know, start of season didn't go to plan. We came in for a lot of criticism, and rightly so, for not picking up results, and, you know, a lot of noise for people that just weren't aware. But we were always relaxed internally. You know that, right? There was no panic. There was no demoralisation. It was stick to the plan. We know, you know, how many years it's going to take to get us to where we want to become. And it's like, just stick to the plan, you know, no need to panic. And, you know, he's obviously trusted me with a long-term contract as well, which I'm ultra grateful for. But yeah, I'm loving this club, and, you know, for me, it'll take someone really special for me to want to move on for here, that's for sure.
In terms of, you spoke about the plan there that you've had. If you don't mind me asking, in that lock, say that 5-year plan you had from the start, are you where you want to be now? Or would you say you'd even, would you say you're lower than that? Would you say
if I'm being honest with you, I think we're probably ahead.
Yeah. I would agree. Like, I don't know. I didn't know you from the start, but I think personally that you're ahead of where we are.
Yeah. Like, where we could be in the plan. I think the difficult thing, right, is that we got to the cup final last year, and what that's done is it's raised expectations. But I think it's really important to be realistic about what we're doing and how long it's going to get us there, because we don't have the budget that top clubs have, you know, regardless of what people might think or people might do. You know, we've had to be very shrewd with what we've done. As I said, you know, 5 or 6 players left when I came in. Yep. We've got transfer fees in for 4 of them. And then every player that's went out, we've had to get a transfer fee in. So it's one player out, one player in, you know, and it's very much, you know, penny pinching.
Yep.
And I respect that model. You know, it's really good. We've got a set wage structure. They don't break that wage structure for anyone. You know, completely. I mean, that goes back to my point now. It's that I don't have a financial conversation with a player until they turn around and tell me that they want to sign for Huntley.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at the team that we've built, it's a young team, so we'll have inconsistent performances. There's no doubt about that, which we do. But I think we'll have more good performances than bad performances. But apart from the odd game here and there, I think what pleases the supporters, or at least the ones that I speak to on a regular basis, is that they see a team that are committed, they see a team that want to do well for Huntley, and they see a team that, you know, play with an identity and in a way of playing that tries to get us a positive result on a Saturday. Now, it doesn't always go to plan, and especially teams at our level will have inconsistencies, but
yeah,
like we know. And I'll keep that internally, but we know where we should be finishing on a yearly basis, and you know that, but it's not to broadcast the fact, but it is about improving year on year, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I want to work under that pressure where, you know, I'm being asked to get results and finish a certain position, because that's how you define progress and that's how you can measure progress.
Yeah.
And it's important to have the data and the evidence behind it, because for us as a football club, we're kind of ahead of the board and the players and the managers thinking like supporters, where when we win, we're a really good team.
Yeah.
And when we lose, we're a really shite team, and we've got to be objective with our work. And analyse that, and, you know, base it off the data that we've got and all that sort of stuff, which is important. So that's what we do. But yeah, I would think we're slightly ahead of where we are in terms of the squad that we've developed, to be honest. And as I said, the fact that we've got everyone signed down a long-term contract is really positive. We've got the continuity and the stability within the squad now. And as I said, we don't need to, you know, I'm not looking to make any additions to the squad. Yes, we need additions here and there. You know, understandably, there'll be one or two players that maybe aren't getting a lot of game time that will want to leave, so then you've got to replace them. Or if there's players available that I think improve the starting 11, you know, you'll take them in, and, you know, that'll replace a player that's already in the door. But we didn't need to. Our squad, for me, I think it's an excellent squad, and it's a group of players, outstanding group of players. Attendance, training is strong. We're regularly getting 18 to 20 every Monday, every Wednesday. And when they turn up, they're ready to work. And I can't ask for any more than that, Robbie. They give me everything. And as long as they continue to do that, you know,
We'll keep going up. Yeah, the plan.
Absolutely. The plan is a natural thing that will happen over time. And if we keep doing the right things, the plan, if you like, will take care of itself. I'm sure of that.
I've really enjoyed this. I did this with Thoris, and I'm going to do it with you. So we're going to finish with like a teammates of the current Huntley squad. I'm hoping you throw some boys under the bus. That's what I'm hoping for here. So the first one we're going to go is best technical player at Huntley.
Best technical player. None of them. They're all useless.
You.
Me. No, it's definitely not me. Chocolate hammies. Michael Dungana, I would say, to be honest.
Finishing is frightening.
The amount of times he's turned me inside out at the mini games at the end of training, you know, is frightening. You know, he's low centre of gravity. They just turn me inside out. He's turned some of the boys inside out, to be honest. I mean, I came out of here training dizzy, you know, the time.
And then you've got to take him home?
Aye, exactly. Then he reminds you of that, the holy home as well, which is the worst. Nah, but I would say him. I think his technical ability, frightening. What a player.
Yeah,
but top guy as well, so I'll go for him.
Quickest.
Well, you do know Gavin Elphinstone was a 100 metre sprinter, right? If you listen to Gavin Elphinstone, he would have won a gold medal in the Olympics by now.
And the Bulls.
And everything else he's tried. I would say Yeah, probably Gav, to be probably fair. Gav or Robbie Foster, is it?
Foz is quick.
Foz is quick. I mean, the GPS stats, he's got up to, 32 kilometres, I think he's got up to in the stats. But
Jesus.
Yeah, if you listen to Gav, he's broke the GPS units with his speed, isn't he? So you've got to go for Gav, otherwise you'll sulk. So
how much does it annoy you when Gav takes off his GPS after about 20 minutes? Every single game.
What you find with Gav, right, he's a maverick, isn't he? Gavin Elphinston lives by his own rules, right? He is a one-off, one of a kind.
Every game without fail.
I'm trying to be nice with what I say here. But he's a crazy person, isn't he? He's very Jekyll and Hyde. But you know what? I love Gav to bits. He's the amount of people that I was warned about before I signed him. You know, and Gav wouldn't mind me saying this, but he was, you know, when Gav signed, he was very much a 8-week player to get us over an injuries that we had. And credit to him, he's asserted himself here as a fan's favourite. And it goes back to that thing, for me, it's not about the ability that you've got. It's about your attitude. It's about your determination. It's about how hard you're willing to work on a football pitch where the supporters will applaud you coming off the pitch knowing that you've gave 110%. Yeah. And Gavin Elphinston is epitome of what you expect for a work rate, for a player of mine. He'll know himself that, he's not the best technical player in terms of some of the players that he's up against, but he plays himself into the team and he's one of my first names on the team sheet regularly because I trust him. And I know that even when he's not having a good game, he works his arse off for the team.
Frightening.
He presses fullbacks at intensity. He tracks back and supports the fullback really well. He makes runs in behind and he scored some really, really important goals for us. His stats are really good. His numbers have been strong.
Yeah.
And he's all in here. He loves the club, and he knows that he's well looked after. And he's always the joke of the changing room in terms of his personality and who he is, but he's like Thoyers in a lot of ways, just two guys that you just adore, for what they
so
are.
So good in the changing rooms.
And those guys are important. And for me, as long as Gav wants to be here, he's got a place for him here because, as I said, I trust him. I trust him immensely. And I know he'll go in that pitch and give 110% and play for the shirt. And he is a fan's favourite.
Yeah.
Massively. You see on social media the support that he gets. He's clapped off the pitch constantly when he's here. And, Gav sometimes thinks he's playing in front of Old Trafford. But look, he's brilliant, and he loves it. He loves attention. He won't mind me saying that. But he's a top guy, and he's been really important for us, and he'll continue to do so.
Brilliant. So I know this next question. I know Wayne Urquhart, the goalkeeping coach, would say me. But who's the easiest to wind up?
Oh, the easiest to wind up. Well, Wayne's definitely the grumpiest. We'll go with that for a start. I've never met a man so miserable on a Monday and a Wednesday. He's a human stress ball is what I call him. He's always stressed to the hilt. He's an unbelievable guy, top guy. I love the guy to bits. He's a really top guy, and he's great with the goalkeepers. And they've obviously got their little goalkeeping union that you wouldn't dare interrupt. He takes a brunt of the jokes because obviously the goalkeeper is always falling in for the jokes. But he bites like mad. But he dishes it out as well. And my soft spot is, he's a massive Rangers fan, and he winds me up about Aberdeen, especially with Monday night's result there. he's by far the grumpiest. If I meet another grumpier man in my life than him, I'll be very surprised, that's for sure. Easiest to wind up? That's an easy one, to be fair. It's Jamesy Connolly all day long.
I see he's doing it now in training. He's doing it on purpose.
It's so easy, though, is it? and I love it. Obviously playing the mini games, or we're doing possession drills, or whatever we're working on at the time. I know if it's getting really competitive, always give a decision against James's team, because he bites like fuck and it's brilliant. To say that toys come out the pram would be an understatement. But he tries to dish it out. He dishes out the banter, but when it's his turn to be on the receiving end of it, he's nice or good. But he's again, top guy. But he needs to learn.
I took a session with, I think you were dealing with, I can't remember who you were dealing with the boys, and I helped Steph out with a training session. and it was split into two groups, and Steph came up to me, and I thought he was about to tell me something out of the training, and he just whispered in my ear, "Don't give James anything." And I didn't know what he meant, so I did it, and fucking hell. Like,
it's so easy though, is it? It's like, but the funny thing is about it is, like, we call it before we see it, right? So, like, obviously we're all coaching and we're getting together, and you know, Ken yourself, like, you'll nudge boys and say, like, watch this, and then they'll just stop the session, and you'll say someone, and instantly he's like, Kenny just goes off in one, and it. But there's a few of them in the team, to be fair, that you can do that too. And
yeah,
look, you need to hear that. Can you need to hear the balance between the serious and the fun side of things? But if you didn't have fun with what you're doing, what's the point?
Yeah,
to be honest, we give up a lot of time, we make a lot of sacrifices, we miss a lot of things with our family and stuff like that to come to football. And if you can't have fun together as a group, then what's the point? And he dishes it out as much as he gives it, but you know, it's he can't take it very well. That's for, that's for sure.
Future gaffer.
Oh, that's a good one, is it?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Coco.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've known Coco for a long time. I mean, I've probably been mates with him for 10, 11 years. That was a chance thing. I just, you know, obviously left the Bro to go to Maud, and he texted me to wish me the best, and we've kept in touch ever since. You know, yeah, we used to meet for coffees regularly, and we'd always said that we were going to work together at one point.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of intelligence. He's played at this level for a long, long time.
He's a great guy.
Great guy. You know, but a great brain as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he does these things. You know, you've got to look at things differently when you're a coach, right?
Yeah.
You can't analyse a game and just kick every ball. You've got to be objective and try and see things differently, where you can make these little adjustments that help get you over the line. And Coco's got that about him, you know, and he has done for a lot of years. Obviously, his rehab's not kind of went to plan this year, but he'll still be on the playing staff. But now he's transitioned over. You know, for me, I think he can be a manager easily. You know, and I think once he gains experience in the coaching side of things, for me, I think he's definitely one that, if he wants to do it, I'm not sure if he does, but if he does, I think he's one that can have a future for himself as a manager.
Yeah, he's helped me out with the, obviously we're talking about the rehab when he was trying to get fit and playing for the 21s, and 45 minutes here and there, he would help me in the second half, and he's very good. And it's like you say, like, I'm quite immersed in what's going on, and he just looks at that bigger picture constantly, and he's very, very good at it.
Yeah.
For sure. Lowest moment you've had at Huntley so far?
Ooh.
Cup final? The result of the cup final?
Yeah, I mean, I think the result of the cup final was definitely a low moment. Obviously, you're 2-0 up, and then, you know, you're 2-0 up, you're never comfortable in any game, let alone against Banks of D, who, you know.
2-0 is a shite score, eh?
Yeah.
Because as soon as it goes 2-1, you think, oh, fuck.
Yeah, look, I've heard people turn around and say, oh, you were in a winning position in cup final, you should have won it, but, you know, for the players being in their first cup final, there was a lot of nerves that night, and, you know, I knew that from the dressing room, but there's no Huntley supporter that was at that ground could turn around and say that players didn't try their best to win that cup final. I mean, the players were outstanding. It was a horrendous night. We had to show a lot of qualities about us, you know, in terms of, you know, we weren't that great on the ball that night, but off the ball, we were outstanding. You know, we pressed, we were aggressive, we defended well, apart from that 10-minute spell where we conceded 3 goals.
Yeah.
And look, to take it to penalties against a team as good as Banks of D, you know, for me was, I don't want to say an achievement, because, you know, for me, I didn't accept losing.
Yeah.
You know that. But
in terms of, we were the underdogs in that cup final.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so I know what you're trying to say about that. I know you're saying that it's not, I agree that getting beat on penalties isn't an achievement, but we were expected to be fucking 4-0 than a half time.
No, look, we were written off big time before the final, and you know, probably, is it rightly so, because they'd beaten likes of Fermartin 4-0 in the cup final before.
Yeah.
The run that they had, I think they'd beat Bucky, I think it was in the semi final
up at
Bucky. So I can understand why we were massive underdogs, and that's fine. You know, when you're a team like Huntley, when you're playing against a team, whether it's Bucky, whether it's Brora, whether it's Fermartin, whether it's Fraserburgh, you're always going to be underdogs, and that's fine. You know, you accept that's where you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we were very determined that night to bring that trophy home, and we were one kick away from doing it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say that's a low moment, to be fair, because because we got there in the first place, which I think was a big achievement for the group. And for me, it allows the players to see that they can get there again.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a belief. For a low moment, probably the start of the season was a low moment. That run was really difficult. Really, really difficult. And it was more for the players because I could see just how devoid of confidence they were.
Yeah.
When we were so confident throughout pre-season and, you know, we're playing some great football at pre-season, you know that yourself. And then we came at the start of season, you know, with a poor result at Turriff, but they were excellent that day.
Yeah.
You know, they were bang up for it. And, you know, we just lacked a bit of belief for that game onwards. But as I said to you earlier, you know, we always stayed calm.
Yeah.
Internally. Yeah, don't get me wrong, there was pressure. You know, there was definite pressure. You know, and the players felt that at times for sure, as much as we did. So that was definitely a low moment, because we've not experienced that too often in a managerial career, you know, so it was quite difficult to deal with that because, as I said, you take it personally, you hold yourself accountable. And then probably Wednesday night there. It's a recent one, so it's fresh in the mind, but
yeah,
there was a lot of optimism going in that game for the supporters, you know, because we've played a lot of the top teams, you know, we've went down to Brechin and Drew this year, and there's no one can turn around and say we didn't deserve to draw that game, because we did. Brora here, we ran them right up until the 85th minute before they got their second goal. Four times against Fermartin, we've ran them all the way in each game. You know, we competed up at Bucky at the start of season, you know, they got their second goal in injury time, I think it was. And we've competed, and I think that's where the expectation came from, and it goes to that point, is that I think the identity that we've got with the majority of supporters is that when we go out on the pitch, we work really hard. And we're organised, you know, didn't give up a lot of chances. And Wednesday night was a freak result for me.
100%.
It was one I didn't see coming, to be honest. And the lack of confidence in the players surprised me, you know, in terms of getting a foot in the ball and trying to play. But as much as that surprised me, I think anyone who are really honest with themselves and that didn't hide behind their own ego, you've got to applaud the opposition. And then Fraserburgh
Brock were good.
Were outstanding. You know, they hounded us in numbers, they pressed us, they shut us down, they score goals in key moments of the game, which is always important. And if the players can learn one thing for that game, is that even at 5-0 up, when Fraserburgh misplaced a pass or
all over each
they allowed a player to get for us to nip in front of them and concede a chance, they were at each other's throats to demand more from each other.
Yeah.
And that's what winners are. You know, so if you really want to become a winner, you've got to find that within yourself. And look, Fraserburgh have got that, and you know, maybe we quite don't at the moment, but our players were spooked, I think, by the start that Fraserburgh made in the game. You know, it wasn't helped by, you know, certain players, you know, failing fitness tests and that before the game.
Yeah.
Which was a disappointment because we obviously had a plan for the game, which we then had to change based on that, which meant a change of shape. But, you know, look, I fully take responsibility for, you know, that result, and that's on me big time. But it goes back to that point, is when you're here, you're working for people and you want to give them, you know, a moment to go and experience. And I feel so guilty about that because, you know, we let a lot of people down. There's no getting away from that, and we've got to own it, which we do. The supporters, we let them down massively. The board, the committee, the volunteers, we let them down. The sponsors, we let them down. But most importantly, you know, as a group, we let ourselves down because we know we're better than that. And we know that we're a capable team on our day, but, you know, we got beat by the better team. It's as simple as that. I would say more recently that was a real low moment, just because of being a semi-final, what was at stake, and you know, to see the disappointment on people's faces after the game, and to see that we let them down massively, it does hurt you. It definitely does.
Best moment or favourite moment you've had?
There's a couple. I think the Scottish Cup run the first year we were there to go down to Dumbarton and be 90 minutes away from having Aberdeen at Christie Park. For me, that was a big moment. Because,
on telly as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it would have been, yeah. But I think it was more because of where the squad was at that time.
Yeah.
You know, it was a really young team, and it was kind of just pieced together because we had to make the changes that we made because, as I said, you know, I just wasn't willing to work with people that weren't motivated. So that was a big change. So that was a high moment for sure, because I thought for an hour we were really good, you know, organised and disciplined, and you know, there was a belief that we might actually do something here, you know, in terms of taking it extra time or something. But we lost the game 4-0, but the boys never shirked their responsibilities that night. Same with Stenhouse Muir the year after, you know, went down there and for 50 minutes we were excellent, you know, 1-1 at half time against a League 2 team with where we are, and it was a deserved 1-1. You were there that day. But no, for me the best moment's got to be getting to the cup final. And the semi-final last year against Locos, you know, that celebrations and that took place that night, and for me that was a realization for me that just how long it had been for people at Huntly to achieve that. And what I got from that night was that the supporters believed in the team, and the way that they got applauded off the pitch, the way they got applauded in the social club after it, you know, the celebrations in the change room were, to me, it showed how much that meant to everyone that night.
Good.
And, you know, for me to be able to reward the supporters with getting to a cup final again and look absolutely devastated that we couldn't deliver it home for them. But again, I think the realisation that we went back to that social club in Inverurie. The Huntly supporters, there was about 400 fans there that night.
The social club was all
club, you know, they hired out a whole social club. And for the players to get a standing ovation after that final, for me, was a realisation that the supporters appreciate what the players are doing on the football pitch, and it meant a lot. You know, devastated that we couldn't deliver it for them, absolutely devastated. But that semi-final win and then the lead up to the cup final for me was a massive moment because it just shows how much it means to everyone. And that's what I say to the players. I'm like, look, you got that reception after a semi-final, so if you actually win something and bring something home,
times up by 100.
People will remember you as a Huntly supporter. You know, you want to go down in the same way that the five in a row or some of the most successful teams that Huntly have had. You know, Huntly's got a tremendous history. But to create a little bit of history for themselves, I think, is really important. And players have got to strive to do that. And, you know, as a manager, we'll continue to strive to do that. And hopefully we can do it with this group of players, and hopefully we can do it with this club, because, you know, I would love to see it, because that night, for me, was a realisation that a lot of people care about this football club and they wanted to do well. And it was a great moment. We couldn't bring it home, but as I said, hopefully one day we can.
And my last question, I got an anonymous, I'll keep him nameless, got a question in today. So your coaching staff, you've obviously got Steph, Wayne, Coco, Thoyers and myself. If you got invited to WrestleMania to fight for the tag team titles and you could choose one tag team partner from the coaching staff, who would you pick?
Well, it wouldn't be Stefan, because as much as he thinks he's a hard man,
he's such a soft.
I don't think he is. I think Wayne's all fart and no shite. Coco, nah, he's too nice for us. It's got to be Thoyer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he's a nutter, isn't he?
See me on the bag, man. I'm fucking.
You'd be like
I'm too soft.
You'd be like a big show.
I'd be good.
Like a big punch,
and then I'm fucked.
One punch knockout. But no, it's got to be Thoyers, isn't it? Like,
I love that man to pieces.
Thoyers would take anything at him, and he would, you know, it typifies his character, is it?
Yeah.
Like he would take anything. He would get knocked down, and he'll always get back up, and he'll always give 100%. And I know it's a jest question,
but it's true.
And that's why you think logically about that thing. But no, like for Thoyers, he's a fucking idiot, isn't he? But
yeah,
just
Thoyers surprised me as a person, because obviously before I joined Huntly, you hear the stories about Thoyers getting naked on buses and fucking climbing on top of bus roofs, and you hear all the funny stories.
Yeah.
But there's been two moments that I can think of at Huntly when I've been really low, and both times Thoyers has been on the phone to me for giving me genuine concern, and he is a great guy, a proper great guy.
Yeah, and to be fair, I'm glad we're actually getting on to that, because I think it would have been an injustice of me to go through a podcast and then mention him, to be fair. You know, goes back to the same conversation I had about Mikey Ray. You know, Thoyers is exactly the same as him. You know, I heard all the stories before, but that man, to work offshore, to have a family with two kids, and to be in the condition that he is in, because when he comes back to training, he's the fittest guy in the team. I mean, we obviously do fitness tests in that pre-season and through the season, and his results are always, he's always top the range. But not only that, he's such a genuine guy. him and his family really care about Huntley. Yeah, he's really fully committed. And for me, I'm delighted that you've got his testimonial, and I pushed really hard to make sure that you got one, because if anyone deserves a testimonial here, it's Alex Stoyer's.
Yeah.
And there's a place here at Huntley. As long as I'm here, there's a place for Alex wherever he goes. He'll always be available for the team. That's why he's in the coaching staff, because yeah. he's a great link between the management and the players. But in the dressing room, like, his influence in that dressing room is just outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of speak highly enough of the boy. You know, I know he was very complimentary to us, you know, in his podcast, which we obviously really appreciate. But, you know, when you're a manager, you do build relationships with people, and you do, you know, build a lot of trust with people. And he's definitely one of them, that, again, you know, you speak about the chairman, about him a friend for life. He's a friend for life, yeah. Stoyer's. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he does religiously phone you at 3 o'clock in the morning, religiously every weekend, to tell you how much he loves you. 1 week he left my voicemail actually last week, where he phoned, was it last, no, 2 weeks ago, because he's offshore now, but he left my voicemail at 5 in the morning, 5:15 in the morning, just to tell me that I was fucking useless as a manager and that he is the best manager that Huntley's ever got to hate, so I've got to do the right thing and resign so he can get the job. He didn't remember anything about it on the Monday. So, no, he was very apologetic on a Monday. But, no, like, look, that's what Thoyer is about, like, some of the voicemails that I've had with him.
Is it true that he phoned it, either you or Stefan, at, like, 3 in the morning to go about a set of pieces?
He did.
It was, was it Steph?
It was Stefan, because I didn't answer the phone to him. and I still don't answer the phone to him this time. I mean, like, I wouldn't even explain some of the photos that I've had for him.
Oh, I've seen his penis more than I've seen my own one.
Mate, it's... nature's his. Like, that kind of fit he gets up to him, like, just, what stories you can tell with that. But but no, it's hey, look, that's part of the banter, isn't
it?
You know,
it's
good. I wouldn't replace Stoyer's for anyone. And you need that in your dressing room. Like I said to you, team spirit is everything,
yeah.
And he is one that holds that glue together for sure. Top guy, top player. I think he's an underrated player. You know, really good defender. Yeah, I'm going to go with him.
Alan, I know you were... thanks for talking to me today. We've obviously... the game's this afternoon, so I appreciate you taking time to talk to me this morning, and all the best for the rest of the season.
Nah, pleasure, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.